We are holding on Tzedek Hey Amud Aleph, sixth line of the wide lines. Tzedek Hey Amud Beis, rather. Tzedek Hey Amud Beis, sixth line of the wide lines, line against Binyamin. All right. We're in the middle of talking about the issue of Basar Shenis Alam Min Ayin. You have meat that was not under the supervision of a person for a while. Do you have a problem with it? We said that Rav says yes. So far, the Gemara had said that it seems that Rav's only problem with it is that an animal might have brought it there, a raven or what have you. And therefore, it seems from so far from what the Gemara was saying that even if it was under, that even if it was in the hands of a goy, then fine, the Rav wouldn't have a problem with it. It doesn't have to be in the hands of a yid. It's just to be that somebody had it so that we know that it wasn't swapped out in a place that is where all the meat is kosher to meat because it all comes from Jewish shechting. So now continuing on this topic, we mentioned before in the sugya that one way in which it can be mutter without having a problem of bosish and alam and ayin is if you have a simit on it. Mm-hmm. So, Rav Huna Merav. So Rav Huna asks Rav, b'charuzin mahu. Suppose you have pieces of meat that are strung on a string, and then it was misalam min ayin. Is that considered a valid simon or not? Amaloi, so Rav tells him, alti shoite, don't be silly with asking such a question. But charuzin, how is a simon? Obviously, if it's on a string like that, then that's definitely a simon. Rashi actually gives two different ways of understanding what Rav said. Either alti shoite b'charuzim, don't be foolish to ask about charuzim, hareza simen, it is a simen, or alti shoite b'charuzim hareza simen. Does b'charuzim belong to the alti shoite, or does it belong to that? Either way, it amounts to the same thing that Rav is saying, that yes, if it's strung like that on a string, and you can recognize it's the same thing, then obviously it is valid.
You say it's not a string. What?
Exactly like that. You have a bunch of pieces of meat that you made holes in them, and you put them on a string. Okay. Another version. Another version is just that Rav Huna said in the name of Rav, straight out, you should know that if meat is strung on a string, you have a bunch of pieces strung together, like a shish kebab, kind of, then that is a valid simon. Okay. Another case, some more cases. Rav Nachman min Nahavda ikla l'gabi Rav Kahana l'pum nara. Rav Nachman from Nahavda, this isn't the regular Rav Nachman in Shas, this is a different Rav Nachman, one time visited Rav Kahana l'pum nara in the city of Pum nara, someplace in Babel, b'mala yom d'kipuri on Erev Yom Kippur.
Wow.
And also, you're going to see why it's important that it was Erev Yom Kippur. Also, Irvi shadu kavdi v'kol yasa. Ravens were going and they were flying around, and some of them were dropping livers and kidneys of animals that they had been holding, like they had taken them from carcasses or whatever. And
this was when the Romans were in.
No, what Romans? This is in Babel. What is Romans?
This is in Babel.
In Babel, yeah. Omelet, so Rav Kahana tells Rav Nachman, it's fine, you can eat them. Shkoil v'echol, you can take those livers and those kidneys and you can eat them. You can assume they come from kosher animals. We've been saying the whole time that there's a problem that ravens might drop off pieces from non-kosher animals. No problem. Ha'idna de'hatera shchiyach tve. Today, certainly, most of the animals that are shechted are for Jews, and most of the shechtim themselves are Jews, and most animals are not shechted because it's Erev Yom Kippur, and everybody needs to make a big soda, and therefore we can assume today more than other days that the meat that you find is kosher to meat.
The heter into what?
The heter of heter. The heter of heter. Shchiach tvei is more common. One way of understanding it actually is that Rav Kahana holds like Levi before, that we said before that Levi disagrees with Rav on the whole concept of Basish and Asalam and Ayin. So one understanding of it is that in fact Rav Kahana disagrees with Rav on that and holds like Levi. There's no problem in general of Basish and Asalam and Ayin, and especially in a case like this when there's a preponderance of kosher to meat anyway. So we'll discuss shortly then what the actual halachas are as a result of that. One interesting thing, by the way, it's brought in Shulchan Aruch that after you do kaparis, You're supposed to take the innards of the chickens or whatever it is you use for kaparis and put them out on the roofs or whatever for birds to eat, because it's also a matter of doing chesed. People are not going to be eating them anyway. So therefore, you should leave them for the birds, and that way it's an extra thing of chesed before Yom Kippur. So we see from our Gemara that was a common enough thing to do, that ravens are picking them up and taking them from point A to point B. Okay. Some more cases. Rav Chiya ba'ovin itbad le'karkisha be'dina, be'ne dana, it says on the side. Rav Chiya ba'ovin one time lost a karkisha, which is a kishka of an animal. It actually translates it with a French word, tabachia, which literally tabachia means like the rectum, but it means, in other words, like the end of the kishka of an animal. Yeah, maybe it's not originally French. Maybe it's a word that the Jews in France use. Whatever it is, anyway, the point is, it means a kishka of an animal, a large intestine or whatever, a small intestine, whatever it is, of an animal. In the old days when they made kishka, you know, like this, you have kishka on Shabbos. They don't use an actual kishka anymore, but in olden days they did. They took the actual kishka and stuffed it with, Anyway, so he lost one. The Beit Din would mean he lost it in Beit Din, but on the side over here it says that really what it's supposed to be is Bene Dana, which means among the barrels. So he lost it in a wine cellar among the barrels. Later on he found a kishka, and the question is it the same one? Also, a kamei de Rav Huna, so he came to Rav Huna to ask what the din is. Is he allowed to eat it? Amale, so Rav Huna asked him, Islach simon b'gadei, do you have an actual simon on it? Amale lois, so Rav Chiba Oven says no. Rav Huna asks him, Islach tvias eina b'gadei, do you at least, is it something that you would recognize? Tvias ayin is, you can't necessarily, you have tvias ayin comes up in various ways, in various places in halacha. In Elam Tzias, it comes up, for example, in our Gemara, we're going to have a bit of it. Sometimes you can have, if you, let's say, for example, the Gemara is going to talk about soon about recognizing somebody. You might have somebody, if they ask you, describe this person, you might not be able to mention any specific distinguishing characteristics of them. But if you see them, you know them right away. That's tvias ayin. So therefore, so Rav Huna asks him, do you have a tvias ayin in it? Amalei ein, and Rav Chiya Oven says yes. Amalei imkain zil shkel. In that case, you can take it and you can eat it, no problem. As long as you can recognize it. Some of the mafarshim say that this kind of thing applies only to a tamat chacham. Others say it would apply more generally. Tosfos also points out it wasn't 100% guaranteed. One second. Okay, so we're towards the bottom of Tzadik Hayom Beis. So Tosfos says that the Tvias Ayin that Rav Chiya Bar Oven had was not, it wasn't like he knew 100% for sure. Sometimes you have 100% for sure Tvias Ayin. You recognize a person even if you can't mention any physical characteristics of him. If that was the case over here, he wouldn't even have a question. The fact is, I'm pretty sure I recognize it, but he wasn't absolutely sure. Nevertheless, Rav Huna tells us it's good enough. In other words, Rashi says, Rav Huna holds like Rav, that Bosesh and its Alam and Ayin is Osir, but in this case, since he had Tvias Ayin, then it's Mutter, because it's similar to a Simon. Another example, he could recognize it, so therefore that was good enough. Another similar example, Rav Chanina Chayzah Itzvah Legaba De Bitra, Rav Chanina Chayzah lost a back of meat, in other words, a piece from the back of an animal. Also a kamei de Rav Nachman. He came, and then later on he found it, and again he wasn't sure if it's the same one. He comes to Rav Nachman. Amalei, this is the regular Rav Nachman in Shas. Yeah. Who was also a Talmud of Rav, or not directly a Talmud of Rav, but whatever. He's a Talmud of the Talmudim of Rav, whatever. Anyway. Amalei Islach Simon Begabe, and again Rav Nachman asks him, do you have a simon in it? Amalei Loi, and Rav Chanina Chayzah says no. He asks him, Islach Tvias Ein, Abagabe, do you at least have Tvias Ein? Would you recognize it on sight? Omalei Ein. And he tells him, Imkain Zil Shkel, in that case, then you can take it for yourself, you can keep it, and you can eat it. And a third example, Rav Nosson Bar Abaye Itzad Lekibura De Tchelta, Rav Nosson Bar Abaye lost a spool of Tchelas thread, where there also you need to know that it's the same one, because Tchelas is easily counterfeited. It can be substituted with indigo or whatever.
The spool is probably recognizable.
Well, that's the thing. Also, like Haveh de Rochista, he came to later on he found one, but he wasn't sure if it's the same one. He comes to Rochista. Amalei Islach Simon Begabei, so Rochista asks him, do you have a simon in it? Amalei Loi, and again he says, I have no actual simon. Islach Tvias Ein Begabei, but you at least have Tvias Ayin, would you recognize it? Amalei Ein, and Rav Nosson Bar Abaye says yes. And again, he tells him, "Imkain zil shkel." In that case, then you can take it. Now, what is the actual halacha over here? So we're saying we just had that Rav Kahana seems to be disagreeing with Rav, because Rav Kahana had said that even when you have a potential problem of bosesh and it's alam and ayin,
And even though we're talking about over here, it is, you have all the meat in town is Jewish, fine, but nevertheless, Rav would still say, as we said before, that maybe the ravens have flown from further away and brought, and yet Rav Nachman is telling, and yet Rav Kahana tells Rav Nachman in Hadar that you're allowed to eat those livers and kidneys. And then on the other hand, you have these three stories over here with Rav Huna, with Rav Huna and Rav Nachman and Rav Chista, where they all passed in like Rav. So Rashi and also the Baal Amor say the halacha is actually like Rav Kahana and like Levi before, who Levi also disagreed with Rav and said there's no problem, that the halacha is not like Rav. Tosfos also mentions that we usually say the halacha is like Rav in Dine Isser Veheter, but that's when Rav is disagreeing with Shmuel. Here we're not to hear Shmuel is not involved in this whole discussion. So therefore, not necessarily is the halacha like Rav. So they say the halacha is like Levi and Rav Kahana. Therefore, Boster Shenis Alam in Ayin is Mutter. You don't know. No, it doesn't matter whether they're greater Tamina Chacham. It doesn't work that way. But maybe it's because you have two of them against one. I don't know. Whatever it is. So why are Rav Chista and Rav Huna and Rav Nachman all following Rav's Shitta? Because they were Tamidim of Rav, so they were Machmer like Rav's Shitta.
Still counted.
Okay, nevertheless, though, that you have Rashi and the Baal Amor learn that the halacha is not like Rav in this. The halacha is like Levi and Rav Kahana, that Boster Shenis Alam and Ayin is Mutter. Again, when we're talking about that the Shochtim in town are... forget about when you recognize it. When the Shochtim in town are Jewish, and therefore you know that all the meat in town, that all the meat that's available to the local Goyim is kosher meat.
So when you recognize it...
Forget recognizing it. Recognizing it, then we're saying even Rav would say there's not a problem. Because if you recognize it... What do you mean? No. Even Rav would say, Levi would say you don't even need to recognize it. Just the fact that all that Levi and Rav Kahana would say, that just the fact that all or most, at least, of the meat in town is kosher, is enough for you to consider this piece of meat kosher. Even if nobody was watching it for a while, it couldn't conceivably have been, yes. Whereas Rav would say only if you recognize it or you have to be a sign. That is how Rashi and the Baal Amor learn. On the other hand, I'm saying Tosfos also, I think, holds that way also. They talk about, but okay, the Rambam, on the other hand, the Rambam and a number of other Rishonim do paskin like Rav, and not only that, but the Rambam's understanding of Rav's opinion is different than what we've been saying all this time. All this time, we've been saying the whole problem Rav would have is that maybe a raven or some other animal or whatever dropped off the meat over here. The Rambam learns that Boster Shenis Alam and Ayin is also, even if there's no problem of ravens, just because it was in a goy's hands at some point, he might have swapped it out with meat of his own. So what comes out of it then? In Shulchan Aruch, it brings the Rambam's opinion as the primary thing, that Boster Shenis Alam and Ayin, if it was ever under the hands of a goy and not being washed by a yid, then it is also, unless it was sealed or unless you have some other way of knowing for sure it was the same piece.
So the Gemara Halacha is Mutter.
What do you mean? The Gemara Halacha is Mutter. Again, according to Rashi and the Baal Amor, the conclusion is not like Rav. Fine, but according to the Rambam, the conclusion of the Gemara is in fact like Rav because of these cases over here that we just had, where only because you recognize it is in Mutter, implying that if not, then it would be Osir. And it's not just a matter of ravens, it's a matter of Goyim. Therefore, the Rambam understands, the Rambam can't argue with the Gemara. He's a Rishon. A Rishon can't argue with the Gemara. The Rambam's interpretation of our Gemara is that the halacha is not only like Rav, but that Rav is also not just talking about where it's a problem of ravens or what have you, but also where it's a problem where the goy may have swapped it out. So you have that. You have the Rambam's opinion about that. So in Shulchan Aruch, it brings that as a primary opinion. Then it mentions another, then you have another case that it mentions in Shulchan Aruch. Let's say you, if you hung up a piece of meat someplace where it's impossible for an animal to drag it away or whatever, then it would be mutter. Then it would be mutter. And then Shulchan Aruch continues, the yesh matirin boster shenis alam and ayin, there are those, namely Rashi and the Baal Amor, who say that boster shenis alam and ayin is in general mutter if you found it where you placed it before. And the Rambam adds, that indeed is a minhag to be made for like that. He said, even if it was in the hands of a goy, as long as all the meat available in that area is kosher meat, then the Rambam says the minhag is to be makel like Rashi and the Rebbe.
Where it was before.
What do you mean if you don't know where it was before?
You forgot where it was.
Well, that's the thing. If you don't know where it was, then you don't have any heter, because then it may have easily been swapped down and you don't realize. So therefore, you actually end up with that You have a difference in minhag, therefore, based on this, between Sfardim and Ashkenazim. Sfardim have to be more machmir on this matter of Bosesh and Esalim and Ayin, based on the Rambam and based on the first opinion that the Machaber brought. Ashkenazim are able to be more makel, like the Ramah, because the Ramah is saying, v'haminag l'hako kisvara ha'achrona. The minhag is like that. So, for example, one place where this comes up is a practical matter, and I mentioned this on the WhatsApp, when you work in an office where there are Jews and Goyim, and you leave your lunch in the office refrigerator. So, are you allowed to? Is it a problem with Bosesh and Esalim and Ayin? So, for Sfardim, it might be a bit of a problem. They might have to make sure that it's wrapped up carefully or whatever in such a way that it can't be swapped out.
Right.
Ashkenazim would be able to be more makel, especially, there is also, on top of that, though, with that said, there is another consideration that a lot of the posts can bring, is basically, is the goy going to derive any benefit from swapping it out? For example, is it possible that he might be swapping it out with something cheaper or whatever, and you wouldn't realize? So, for example, it's possible that even for Sfardim, for example, therefore, in an office refrigerator, there might be reason to be makel because they have nothing to gain from it. And in fact, if it were found out that they're taking somebody else's lunch, they'd very likely get fired. No, they're goyim. We're not talking about chilul Hashem, but they would very, very likely be fired or disciplined or something. So maybe there'd be reason to be makel over there. But when you're talking about, for example, when meat is being delivered by a goyish courier or whatever, then you have to be more careful. So again, Sfardim would have to be more careful about that than Ashkenazim because of these two opinions. Okay. Let's go on. Omar Rava, me reisha hava amina simona onis odis mitzvias eima. Rava says, I used to think that a simon is a stronger thing than tvias ayin. In other words, again, we said before, sometimes you have that you can point to an actual simon. I cut this meat in a certain place or whatever, in a certain shape or what have you, triangular, like we said before in the Gemara, versus tvias ayin, where I can't mention any specific thing, but I know it when I see it. So Rava said, originally I thought simonim are a stronger thing, because after all, the hamadrin and aved tev simona, because after all, we see, when it comes to ashavas aveda, you return a lost object to anybody based on simonim, as long as they're good simonim. But v'loyma hadrinin b'tviyas eina. On the other hand, we don't return things based on tviyas ayin only to a talmud chacham. Now, okay, Tosfos says that the thing is that, you know, there we could say you could argue the reason is because only a talmud chacham has a chazaka of not lying, as the Gemara mentions over there. If we see that he only bends the truth in three areas, the masech, the b'koryo, b'ushpiza, then the Gemara mentions over there that there are three things that a Talmud Chacham is expected to bend the truth on a little. One of Masechta, if they ask him, did you learn a certain Masechta, he'll say no out of humility. The Puria, Rashi explains over there, it means if they ask him, did you sleep on a certain bed, then he'll say no, because if they find Keri on it afterwards, then it'll be embarrassing to him. Or Boshpiza, if they ask him, how were your lodgings, and he won't praise the guy, because otherwise other people are going to go and eat him out of house and home. Whatever, the point being that if you see, the Gemara says over there, if you see that he says the truth for everything else except those three things, then you know he's trustworthy and you can return him lost objects for three asayim. But again, Tosfos says the difference is
you have to check a Talmud Chacham.
Yeah,
and if you don't check him, you don't.
If you don't know that he lies about other things also, then he doesn't have this din of a Talmud Chacham as far as returning a lost object. If you don't know, I don't know. Do you give him a chazaka to begin with? I don't know. I'm not sure. Anyway, the point is that Tosfos says the difference is there we're talking about a strong Tviya Sayin. Here, as we said before, we're talking about a weaker Tviya Sayin. Anyway, the point is, the Rava is saying, so originally I thought simonim are stronger, because simonim, even if they're not the strongest simonim, you'll return a lost object. Tviyas ayin, a weak tviyas ayin, you wouldn't. Hashtar, shamnitinu, lahani shmaisa. Now, Rava says, when I heard these cases that we had before with Rav Chiya bar Avin and Rav Chanina Chayza and Rav Nathan bar Abaya, where in each of those cases, the Chachamim told them, if you have tviyas ayin, then you're able to take the meat and you're able to eat it. I mean, a tviyas ayin adipa. Then I realized tviyas ayin actually must be a much stronger thing in a certain way.
Because of the number of people.
Not because of the number of people, but actually I realized that actually we must say that tviyas ayin is a very strong thing. And actually when we say over here adipa, on the face of it, adipa means it's stronger. And some of them are foreshadowing, for example, I think the Rosh learned that that's actually what it means. I think not the Rosh, I think the Rashba talks about this, that, for example, if Beis Din is faced with one person who has simonim and a different person who has tviyas ayin, then maybe we should trust the person who has tviyas ayin. On the other hand, there's a Tosfos in Brachos, which is brought over here on the side in the Masoros HaShas, that says maybe adipa doesn't mean stronger, it just means at least of equal weight. No, not preferable, but of equal weight. That tviyas ayin is of equal. Yeah, adipa means it's stronger, but it doesn't mean stronger, it means stronger than what we thought. We thought it was weak, and now we see it's just as strong as okay. The Eloi Temahochi, and Rava says, actually, you can prove that Tvius Ayin must be a very powerful thing, because if you weren't going to say that, how would you ever have a blind person would ever be able to have relations with his wife? What if it's a different woman? Yeah. How would anybody be able to have relations with their wife at night when they can't see them? Obviously, it's a matter of Tvius Ayin. So actually, Mephoshim explained that maybe Rachel and Leah had similar voices. First of all, it's possible they had similar voices. No, we're not talking about Tvius Ayin de Kola. We're talking about sound. That's 1 second. Ela b'Tvius Ayin de Kola. Obviously, what it is how does it work in the case of a blind person or in the case of nighttime? He knows his wife's voice. Therefore, that's acceptable. Now you're saying Yaakov and Rachel and Leah. So one answer is actually that Rachel and Leah had similar voices, which it could be. You have the same way. If they have similar voices, then you have to be concerned. Fine, but in this case, Yaakov had no reason to think that Leah had been switched out for Rachel. Besides that, also you have over there actually. You know, not only they have similar voices, but you have many many sources that say they were actually twins. But anyway.
That's even more.
Okay, but that's the point. Most people's wives aren't twins. But besides that, also, you have, there is actually an explanation that I once saw that all that night, remember, Rachel had told the simonim to Leah, but I once saw an explanation, I don't remember from who, that actually Rachel hid out in the room that night, and whenever Yaakov was speaking to Leah, Rachel would actually answer from where she was, under the bed or whatever, so that Yaakov would think he really is with Rachel and not realize, and because let's say their voices are not similar enough. Anyway, the point is that normally a person can rely on Tvius Ayin or the color, the fact that he recognizes his wife's voice. With that said, by the way, Marshall says on top of that you have something else also. And what about if the person is both blind and deaf? Right. Marshall says, okay, but if you find her in her bedroom, then already you have a chazaka of the place that it's probably her, and then you can rely on that also.
Let me ask you a question. At that time, before Masnei Torah, they didn't sign any papers for Nisui.
What does that have to do with anything? What does that have to do with anything? The fact is that Yaakov had done Kiddush. Okay, so I don't know what they signed. I don't know if they signed papers. What does that have to do with anything? Let's go on. Okay, so Hochanami b'Tvius Ayinah. Therefore, the same answer must be that in other cases also, you can use Tvius Ayinah. You can use Tvius Ayin. You may not be able to, you can't specifically say any simonim of the piece of meat, as we said before, but just the fact that you're able to recognize it is enough. So the same way, that's good enough.
Nobody says that Ramona applied
to... Rashi explains. When it comes to an Aveda, you have a stronger point, you have a stronger reason to say that Tvius Ayin is not enough, because after all, people are greedy. The person may easily lie in order to get something that doesn't belong to him. But in other cases, we're not worried about that. So therefore, yes, you can rely on Tvius Ayin. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So therefore, so we see that it works to be master a man to be master a wife to her husband when he's blind or when it's at night. So we see that Tvius Ayin and the color is good. So the same thing over here, Tvius Ayin is also good. And further, Rabbi Yitzchok Rebbe Rabbi Mesharshia says, Teda, I can prove this also, that Tvius Ayin is very strong, and in a way even stronger than Simonim, because let's consider a scenario. The Ilu also betray, really, it's supposed to be. Suppose that two Edim come, Va'amri, and they say to Beis Din, Planya, Ploini, the high Simone, Vahai Simone, who has such and such distinguishing features, Kotel Nafsha, killed so and so. We're not going to execute the person who has those simonim based on that, because other people conceivably might have the same simonim as well. But the Ilu Amri Islam Tvius Ayin Bagave, but suppose the same Adim come and say we have a Tvius Ayin, we don't know his name, but we'll recognize him on site. Then we could execute him on that basis. Now, if they saw him at night, then there's not Tvius Ayin. We're talking about, in other words, if they saw him, they don't know his name, but they could recognize him if they saw him again. But and that's good enough. Beis Din will consider that to be valid evidence. Actually, Tosfos points out an interesting point, which is there is a case where you use simonim as far as dinim of Eishes Ish, namely if you have a man is missing and then we find a body and we're not sure if it's him, we're able to use simonim to determine whether it's him or not and allow his wife to remarry. There's such a simonim on his body, whatever, as long as they're distinguishing simonim. You have a whole Gemara about it at the end of Yevamos. But anyway, Tosfos says, actually what would happen is, that what would happen is actually we wouldn't say we would allow the simonim are good enough for her to be married, but we would still say that after all there is a certain degree of sophic, and therefore if she were to be mizana during her second marriage, we wouldn't necessarily execute her for that, because it is after all a sophic whether her first husband was really dead or not. Okay. Anyway, fine. So we see that to be a sign is a very strong thing. Omer Rav Ashi Teda, and Rav Ashi says, I have another proof of how strong Tviyasayin is. The Ilu Omer Le'inish L'Shluchei, Kauye L'Klanya, if a person says to his shliach, go call over so-and-so, and here's how you'll recognize him, D'Hai Simone V'Hai Simone, he has such and such distinguishing characteristics. The fact is, Sofik Yodolei, Sofik Le'Yodolei. The shliach might be able to recognize and might not. He's not necessarily going to be able to deliver the message.
That's right.
The Ilu Islei Tviyas Einu V'Gavei, but if the shliach can recognize the guy, then as soon as he sees him, he'll know him. So again, we see that Tviyas Ayin is a powerful thing, and in a certain way, even stronger than Simonim. So therefore, again, in these cases with the lost meat, with the lost and found meat, Tviyas Ayin is good. Again, you do have some beforeshim who say that heter Tviyas Ayin to be makirid applies only to a Talmid Chacham, but then you have other rishonim who learn that it applies more broadly. Again, well, the halacha, first of all, again, you have the opinion of Rashi and the Baal HaMor that you don't have to worry about it anyway, because at least in a place where all the meat is kosher, then there's no issue of Bostar Shinnis Alam and Ayin anyway. If we say that there's an issue, as the Rambam says, of Bostar Shinnis Alam and Ayin, then yeah, I mean, as a, you have to, yeah, then Tviyas Ayin is good enough, but whether we accept that it's only for a Talmid Chacham or not, that I'm not sure about. Okay. Mishnah says, Hanoito Gid Hanosha, so now let's get back to Gid Hanosha. When a person is taking out the Gid Hanosha from a leg of an animal, he has to take out the whole thing. And that means, we learned the other day, that Rav Meir had said, Hatita Boi, that you need to dig in and get all the different branchings of all the nerves of it. Rav Yehuda says, you don't have to go that far. All you need to do is remove an amount that you've been Makayim the mitzvah of taking it out. We learned before that Rabbi Yehuda had said you don't necessarily have to take out the whole thing.
The main nerve only.
Now, if a person eats from the Gid HaNosha Kezayis, so for Gabon, then he gets Malkus. He gets 40 Malkus, as usual, because he was over on a lab. What if he ate an entire Gid HaNosha, but it wasn't even a Kezayis? It came from a small animal, let's say. Nevertheless, Chayev, he would still be Chayev Malchus because he ate a beria. Now, he ate a beria. Now, there is actually so you have a bit of discussion, because usually a beria means a living, creature. So how does it work over here? So Tosfos, among others, discusses at some length. Tosfos says the idea is when you have, since the Torah singles it out by name and says that it's also, the Torah says you're not allowed to eat the Gid HaNosha, then therefore it by itself can be considered a barrier, even though it's not a living creature all by itself. The Rashba talks about that and mentions some other distinctions that in order for a thing to be a barrier, he says there's two other things that has to be also. It has to be that it was also to begin with from when it came into existence. Not, for example, let's say, for example, a shur on nisko, where at one time it was a normal shur and later on it gored somebody and now it's chayav nisa. That's not considered a barrier because it wasn't also, the Rashba says, it wasn't also to begin with. It only became also later in its life. So the Gid HaNosha is that, because it was also to begin with. And another characteristic of it, he says, it has to be, when you cut it up, it's no longer called by its original name. So for example, Chaleb would not be considered a barrier, because you cut up Chaleb, a piece of Chaleb is still called Chaleb. People still call it Chaleb, and it's still also Menatara as Chaleb. As opposed to with the Gid HaNosha. Well, as opposed to the Gid HaNosha, once you cut it up, nobody calls it Gid HaNosha anymore, once you cut it up into pieces. And the fact is, as our Mishnah is saying, you only chayav for kezayis of it.
Right.
So therefore, so based on those characteristics, therefore, the Gid HaNosha can be considered a barrier. It is something that the Torah singles out by name.
So a barrier, when you cut it doesn't...
To be a barrier, it has to be that once you cut it up, it's no longer called by the original name. Okay. Okay, so anyway, so if a person eats it, even though there's no kezayis, he still ate a beria, and therefore, he's chayav. ochel mizek kezayis from mizek kezayis, this we discussed a few days ago, that if a person eats a kezayis from the gidanosha of the right leg and a kezayis from the gidanosha of the left leg, sofeg shmonim, he gets 80 malchus, double malchus, because one, each one is a separate lav, or not a separate lav, but whatever, it's a separate kezayis of it, a separate kezayis of it. So yeah, Rabbi Yehuda, I mean, it's sofeg alavoyim, Rabbi Yehuda says he only gets one malchus, because he said the other day, Rabbi Yehuda holds, it only applies to one leg. We said in the end, he learns from a pasuk that it applies only to the right leg, therefore he's not high of malchus for the left leg.
What happens if he eats twice of the same right yeast?
If there's a kazai separately from each one, then they give him separate hasura for each one, then yeah.
Then
he'd be kazai separately. Right. So the Gemara tells the case. Talking about this matter of how much of the Gid HaNosha has to be removed. So again, we had Rabbi Meir saying you have to remove the whole thing, and Rabbi Yehuda saying that you only have to remove some part of it. So here's a case. The Gemara says, Bar Piyuli, have a koi tamei to Shmuel. Bar Piyuli, that was his name, was standing in front of Shmuel. Become a nakir atma. He was doing nikur on the leg, on the thigh of an animal to prepare it for Shmuel to be able to eat. Havak a goyim lay. And what he was doing is he was only cutting the gid anosha on the surface. He wasn't going deep into it to remove all the branches of it and whatever. Which is like what Rabbi Yehuda says.
Yeah.
Amalei, so Shmuel tells him, chus de tfei, go further down. Go further in and make sure you get all of it.
Search further.
And well, chus literally means go down. So go down in it further. And in fact, Shmuel says, look at this, it's a good thing. If I hadn't been watching you now, sufficiently, you would have fed me something that's also. So the whole Gid HaNosha is also. So Bar Piyuli, when he heard that, he was frightened. He thought Shmuel was accusing him of being a Rosh or an Amoret or something. He dropped the knife that he was using to take out the Gid HaNosha. So Shmuel tells him, don't be so afraid. I'm not accusing you of being an Amoret. I'm not accusing you of being a Rasha. The Ori Loch, Rabbi Yehuda, Ori Loch. Evidently, whoever taught you to do Nikur taught you like Rabbi Yehuda. So like we said the other day, there was a period of time when the halacha was accepted like Rabbi Yehuda, and then after that, during that period, we can't necessarily trust the Menacher to say he removed the whole Gid HaNosha, because he might have only done, like this by fuel he was doing, and remove only part of it. Eventually, once that generation died out or retired or whatever, then fine. That Shmuel says to Bar Piyuli, evidently that's the situation. So I'm not accusing you of anything, but you should know from now on the halacha is like the mayor, don't just remove some part of it like Rabbi Yehuda says. Amar of Sheshet, my the shoko Bar Piyuli to arise to Rabbi Yehuda. So Rav Sheshet says you should know the part that Bar Piyuli was the part that he was going to remove on his own before Shmuel told him to continue was the part that is usher to arise to according to Rabbi Yehuda. So the question is, what does that mean? Cloud the sheer Dirabon and the Rabbi Yehuda. So what does that mean? And the part that he would have left over all the various other branchings and whatever would be also Dirabon. Of course, what Rabbi Yehuda would agree is also he'd just say it's only Dirabon. Well then, if you're going to say that the part, Rav Sheshet is informing us, you should know the part that Bar Piyuli was going to remove on his own is the part that Rabbi Yehuda considers as also Daraisa. So what's the implication? Does that mean Rabbi Yehuda would agree that the rest of it is also Dirabon? He would say there's only a certain part that's also Daraisa. In that case, if that's what it means, in the sheer the rabbon and the Rabbi Yehuda, that would seem to imply that what Bar Piyuli left in there, what he would have left in there, is also, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, is also just that it's only also the rabbonon. The question then is, Eli Da'orilai, come on, Orilai. So whoever taught him Nikur, which opinion was he following? According to Rabbi Yehuda, according to the mayor, the whole thing would be also Daraisa. According to Rabbi Yehuda, at least the whole thing would be also Dirabanan. Either way, why is he thinking he only needs to remove it? Either way, also is also.
According to Rabbi Yehuda.
Okay, again. Bar Piyuli, we said, was only going to take out a certain part.
Right.
Shmuel tells him that's wrong, the halacha is like Rameh.
Right.
But even Bar Piyuli knows you have to follow the dinim that the Chachamim tell us. So if we're saying the rest of the Gid HaNosha is also Dirabanan according to Rabbi Yehuda, then who taught him Nikur? Which opinion were they following? If they were following Rabbi Meir, he would have to remove the whole thing. If they're following Rabbi Yehuda, he would Midaraisa. And if they're following Rabbi Yehuda, they would also have to remove the whole thing, part Daraisa, part Dirabanan.
That's the question.
Fine, but nevertheless, it still needs to be removed. The fact that Bar Piyuli was thinking he doesn't even need to remove it at all seems to show that according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's parts that are not even also Dirabanan. So that's the question. Ella, Amar of Sheshet, no, rather we have to correct. Rather, what Rav Sheshet says is, my de shokel Bar Piyuli de Araisa, that little mayor, Hagoyza Bachad, what Bar Piyuli took out is the part that according to the mayor is also de Araisa. Umay de Shire de Rabbanan little mayor. the part that he left in is the part that according to the mayor would be also only Dirabban. In other words, one second. Now we're saying differently. Now we're saying.
What are you saying?
Before we thought that the mayor holds that Daraisa, you have to remove the whole thing. Now we're saying that even the mayor is saying that you don't have to remove all the branches and everything of it Daraisa, only Dirabban. Rav Meir would agree that Daraisa, there's only a certain part of it which is also, which actually we're going to get to.
In this second version,
even according to Rav Meir, exactly.
Yes, according
to Rav Meir, that's what we're talking about. The main gid, we're going to see in a second, what? The Rav Yehuda, after the Midrabanan, surely, because according to Rav Yehuda, even the Rabbanan, there wouldn't be anything more that would be also. So in other words, when Bar Piyuli is removing only part of the Gid Anasha, he was following Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. He was taught, according to Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, that was a part which is also Daraisa, and that's it. There's no part that's also Dirabban. And therefore, so that's he was taking out just that part until Shmuel informed him, you should know, the halacha is like a mayor. So fine, granted, if I had eaten the rest of it, I wouldn't have been over on the issue of Gidanosha Daraisa, because even according to the mayor, you don't have to remove more Daraisa, but the mayor says you have to remove the rest of Dirabban, and you weren't doing that.
Why have we changed from the previous version of the mayor? Which was
because Rav Sheshes is informing us that the part that Bar Piyuli was removing is the only part that's also Daraisa. If we said that it meant that according to Rav Yehuda, then it would mean the rest is also Darabanan, but then what's Bar Piyuli doing? Again, Shmuel is not accusing Bar Piyuli of being a Rasha or an Amaret. So obviously Bar Piyuli did learn from people who knew the Halacha. So therefore, we're forced to say that it means that Rabbi Yehuda would say no more than that. And Rabbi Meir would say that also, but he would add that more of it is also Dirabam. With that said, you have a different explanation. The Ritva explains by putting together all Gemara over here, as well as the Gemara on Tzadik Beis on the days where we first discussed Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda's opinions, the Ritva learns that both of them learn that the Gid and all of its branches are also Daraisa. The argument between them is about the Shuman Agid. We talked over there about there's a layer of fat around the Gid, that would be the argument whether that part is also Daraisa.
No, but the
Ritva would learn then our Gemara is that Bar Piyuli was taking out only the Gid Anasha, and Shmuel informed him that according to Rav Meir's opinion, you have to be removing the fat as well because that's also Darabana. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda would say the fat is not also either Daraisa or Darabana, the fat around the Gid Anasha. Right?
So that's it.
I mean, the halacha is anyway, you have to take it out, you have to take out the whole thing and the Shulman regardless.
But this last opinion of Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda is the definitive one.
No, well, again, it doesn't really matter. The halacha, first of all, is like Rav Yehuda anyway, like Rav Meir anyway, that the whole thing has to be removed.
Right.
And we said regardless of Daraisa or Dirabanan, and the fat around it has to be removed as well. Either fat for sure is not Daraisa, it's Dirabanan, or Yisroel, Kedoshim, Nagubar, Yisroel, whatever, but yeah, it has to be removed.
But you're not sure on the basis of why it has to be removed.
Okay, whatever it is. The point is, that's not Megillah Halacha. Fine. Okay. Then the next Mishnah says, Ha'oichel Megidah Nosha. Okay, let's go on. The point is, the person is still over whether he eats it anyway. He's over Daraisa, he's over Darabanan, either way it's missing. Okay. Ha'oichel Megidah Nosha. Then we said, if a person eats from the Gidah Nosha, we said that if he eats a kezayis from it, or if he eats an entire gid anasha, even if it's not a size of a kezayis, then he gets malchus. So Amar Shmuel lo'osra tora elashala kach bilvad. So Shmuel says actually the only part that's also daraisa is the part that is on the kach. Now the kach we've been saying throughout the perek is the thigh muscle, the quadriceps muscle. It's a round muscle that surrounds the top bone of the leg. You have, again,
and in the back?
It surrounds the bone.
Yeah.
We're talking on the back legs only. Gid Anasha, there's no Gid Anasha on the front.
The front and the back leg.
Okay, it's a muscle that wraps around the entire coolis, which is the upper bone of the leg, the femur, yeah. So the calf is a roundish muscle. It looks like a spoon. That's why it's called calf. That surrounds.
It's called also the
calf. Yeah, I guess. I don't know exactly what muscle is what in human body, but yeah. I mean, you can see pictures of it over here. For example, here you have this is the calf. This is the calf hayerech. This is the quadriceps muscle. Yeah.
I don't recognize it.
Okay, but that's what it is. I mean, you can, you know, there you have. There's another picture of it. There's whatever you have. You know, you have a number of different muscles in the leg. You have the sartorius, and you have the this, and the that, and the other, whatever. The point is, there's one muscle over there, one particular muscle over there that's called the calf. And therefore, so Shmuel is telling us the part that's also Minatora is only the part that's on the calf. Shenema al-kaf ha-yoreh, because the Pasuk says that you're not allowed to eat the gig, which is al-kaf ha-yoreh, on the spoon of the thigh. Amar Rapapa Ketanoi. So Rapapa says there's actually a machloikas tanoim on that subject. The Rabbanon of our Mishnah agree with Shmuel. Rabbi Yehud. Okay, we're talking Daraisa. Boy, off the turn. No?
Okay,
Al Kaf means on the calf of the thigh. So therefore, Shmuel is saying only that part is also Daraisa. The rest of the sciatic nerve and whatever animal's branches and whatever would be also only the Rabbanon. So the Papa is saying, you should know not all Tanoim agree to that. Rabbi Yehuda of our Mishnah would disagree with Shmuel. Not necessarily Rabbi Yehuda's opinion that's mentioned in our Mishnah, but Rabbi Yehuda's opinion that we're going to have in a Braisa. So Amar Papa ki Tanoim. So the Papa says, you should know this is actually a Machloket Tanoim. Because a Braisa says, Ochloi ve'en be'kazai, which is similar to our Mishnah, Ochloi ve'en be'kazai is chayiv. We said in our Mishnah that if you eat if you eat an entire gidam nasha, but the thing is not a kezayis in size because it's a small animal, a person is still chayiv malchus for it. Rabbi Yehuda Omer actually heber kezayis. Rabbi Yehuda says a person is only chayiv malchus if the gidam nasha is at least the size of a kezayis.
So one second,
that's what we're going to figure out. My time of the Rabbanon. Now, why would the Rabbanon say a person is chayiv malchus even if it was less than a kezayis? The reason is beria b'fnei asmahi, because they would consider that it is a beria. It's an independent entity. Again, like Tosfos says, the fact is the Torah singles it out. It's not like, for example, you have, let's say, chaylev, the Torah says you're not allowed to eat, but chaylev is a generic term that includes various fats in the body cavity, like we talked about before. The same thing with dam, the same thing with other things, as opposed to gid anosha is a specific thing mentioned, and therefore it can be called a beria, even though it's not a living.
When you cut it, you're still higher.
That's the Rashba mentions that point, that that chaylev still maintains its identity even when you cut it up, whereas the gid anosha doesn't. Right. Okay. Anyway, so the Chachamim would say it's a beria, and therefore, even if it's less than a kazai, it's a person that's chayav malchus for eating it. Rabbi Yehuda would say, Achila Ksivabay. The fact is, the Pasuk says, Lo Yoichlu Bnei Yisrael is Gid Anoshe. Yoichlu implies that there's Achila, and Achila means a Kazayim.
Right.
Achila means a Kazayim. So therefore, the person is Chayev only if he ate a full Kazayim. So now, as we go through the discussion over here, we'll see that what Shmuel mentioned about the part, that only the part, Al-Kaf HaYoreh, is the part that's also Daraisa, we will see now, as we go through the short discussion over here, that Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim are arguing partially on that point. So, what would the Rabbanon answer to that? It's true, it says, Lo Yoichlu, which implies that it should need to be a Kazayis. They would say, Hahi Achila, Diki Isbe Abba, V'chamisha Zaytim, V'ocho Chad Kazayis Mechayim. The Chacham would say, yeah, but what that means to tell us is you shouldn't think a person is chayiv, you're thinking maybe the other way around. Maybe a person is chayiv malchus only if he eats the entire gid hamasha, and therefore if the thing was 4 or 5 kezeitzim in size, he would have to eat the whole thing to be chayiv. But you would still, so that's what the word lo yoichlu means, that if the person eats it, so if the person eats the whole thing, he is chayiv malchus, whether it's more than a kezayis or less than a kezayis. You shouldn't think that it's only if he eats the whole thing, not if he only eats a kezayis. Lo Yoichlu tells us even if he only eats one kezayis out of a large gid anosha, he's still chayev for that. But it doesn't mean that it has to be a kezayis. It could conceivably be less than a kezayis, and he's chayev because of beria.
But less than a kezayis is not really...
It is beria.
It's not considered achila.
But it's nevertheless, it's beria. The Chachamim would say the word achila is teaching us the other way around. If it's larger than a kezayis, you don't have to eat the whole thing. Eating one kezayis is enough to make him chayev. But on the other hand, if it's smaller than a kezayis, then eating the whole thing will also make him chayev.
And how do they know it's beria?
Because it is. That's what they're, again, however we define beria, they hold that it meets those criteria.
Yeah,
again, according to Tosfos, because the fact that the Torah singles it out as an item of Isser, a separate entity, according to the Rashba, you have also the point that it exist that from the beginning it was also, there was never a time in its existence that it was mutter, and also the fact that if you cut it up, it loses its identity. Yeah. Okay. Zir Rabbi Yehuda. Now, what would Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? He would say, I don't need a separate pasuk. He would say, I don't need the word achila to teach us that concept that if the gid anasha is larger and he eats one kezayis, it's chayav. That we can learn from the fact that the pasuk says that you're not allowed to eat the gidanosha, which is on the kaf hayorech, implying even if you only ate the part that's on the kaf, as long as it is a kezayis, then you're chayev. No, a kezayis. Because again, Rabbi Yehuda says it has to be a kezayis. But in other words, the point is that he would say, and you chachamim are telling us that you need a separate pasuk to tell us that you don't have to eat the whole thing to be chayev. Of course you don't have to eat the whole thing to be chayev. You learn that from Asher al-kaf hayorech. There, Rabbanan.
He doesn't believe it's a barrier.
Well, right, but the point is more that he's saying the entire gidanasha is equally also daraisa, not like Shmuel said. That's the point. And therefore, the pasuk is telling us even if you only ate the part of al-kaf hayorech, which is only a small part of the larger gid, nevertheless you'd be chayev, but it would have to be a kezayis. Their Rabbanon, whereas the Rabbanon would answer to that, they would say, you're learning from Asher al-Kaf HaYorech, Hahumi Baru Le'lechid Shmuel. We need that to teach us what Shmuel said. Da'amah Shmuel le'osur Torah el'cha al-Kaf HaYorech. They would hold that only the part on the Kaf HaYorech is also to begin with. The rest of it that spreads throughout the rest of the leg, they would say, is not also Daraisa. So therefore, they need the passage for that. They don't have it available to teach us where you only ate part of it. So therefore, they would say, so in other words, they accept Shmuel's principle. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with it.
That the kaf hayorech,
that not only the kaf hayorech, but the entire length of the gidanosha is also daraisa, according to Rabbi Yehuda.
According to Rabbi Yehuda, the whole thing is aser.
Right.
And how he takes kaf hayorech as
he
well.
He says, Al-Shara kaf hayorech teaches us that even if you only ate the part on the kaf hayorech, as long as it was at least a kazayis, then you're chayef.
And the rest, you don't need a kazayis?
Any part you need a kazayis.
So what's the point of having kaf hayorech?
Because he's saying that kaf hayorech is giving you as an example. Even if you only ate the part that's asher al kaf hayorech, as long as it's achila, as long as it's eating, as long as it's kazayis, then you're chayav. And the same thing with any other part of it, as long as you ate a kazayis.
That's the point.
Fine. Whereas the chachamim would say that, no, fine. So Rabbi Yehuda is saying that asher al kaf hayorech is just giving us an illustration. You ate only part of it, namely only the part that's asher al kaf hayorech, out of the entire gidam nosha, which is offered.
So then, and he still says that the whole gid lower than the kaf hayorech is still asur.
Yes.
And where does he hold it from?
Yeah, that's where he says it, because he learns that the whole thing. Yeah. Okay, so one second. Ve Rabbi Yehuda, what would Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? He would say, hayorech, the kula yorech. Sure, but the pasuk says, asher al kaf hayorech, which implies that it's something that extends throughout the entire yorech. Throughout the yorech, but it was not only the kaf, but the rest of the thigh also. Again, you have the calf is it the calf
is just now the yerech is the whole calf.
No, you have the calf which surrounds the entire femur,
okay.
But then you have that
the
calf yerech is that muscle. So Rabbi Yehuda is saying that the part that's osur is okay. You know what? There's also this actually. One second, we said al kaf hayerech, and Rashi makes a point also saying masha ala kaf. We learned before that the gidanosha, part of it runs along the outside of the kaf, and part of it, we said, goes in, like into a keyhole. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is saying the part of the gidanosha that's also, so no, it's not the whole thing, not the entire leg is also. In fact, according to Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah, we said all you need to do is mitzvah netzira. But Rabbi Yehuda would say that all of what's on the yerech itself that runs that's associated with the muscle is osur, but midaraisa. But he would say, and therefore the pasuk is telling us, even if you only ate the part that's al kaf hayerech, that's on the surface, that would be enough to make him chayiv malchus, as long as it was a kezayis. But the rest of it that's inside the muscle was also osur. But he would say, therefore, so anywhere in that area, if he ate a kezayis, he would be chayiv. But the lower down on the leg, that's not part of the yerech anymore. Then that's not part of the yerech anymore. Fine.
Fine. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, the kafar yerech is the quadriceps.
Right. Well, everybody agrees the kafar yerech is the quadriceps. The chachamim agree with that also. But Rabbi Yehuda is saying that from the fact that it says al kafar yerech means that even if the person only eats the part that's al kaf, as long as it's kezayis, he's chayav malchus. It says al kafar yerech. No, yeah. So therefore, the chachamim are saying that Shmuel says actually only the part that's al kaf hayerech is osur. Rabbi Yehuda says no, the part that's further down inside the yerech is also osur. However, the pasuk is implying that even if you only ate the part that's al kafayerech, then you're chayev as long as it was kizayin.
Let me ask you one.
So he learns from Hayerach. Okay, can you ask the question if it's something that you need to understand?
Then why does the Torah say Kaf Hayerach instead of saying Kaf Yerach?
That's why Rabbi Yehuda says Hayerach, Sib Dekula Yerach. If it weren't for that, you would think it's only the part that's out, only the part that's on the outside. Now, when the Pasuk says Hayerach, it means the entire Yerach. Ve'er Rabbanon, what are the Rabbanon answer to that? Hahu Deposhet Isuri Dekula Yerach. That means that the Torah wants to identify for us which gid is it that's also the gid apnimi, the inner gid, as we talked about the other day, Deposhet Isuri Dekula Yerach, where the branches and everything of it spread out throughout the entire Yerach. As opposed to the gid, no, the point, that's the problem, that's the thing. The gid achitza in the femoral nerve or whatever does not go through the kula yerech because it doesn't branch out throughout the entire yerech. It runs through one part of the yerech and it has very few branches. You can't say that it branches out throughout the entire yerech, as opposed to the sciatic nerve does. Therefore, so the Rabbanan would say, when it says al kafay, when it says hayerech, the pasuk wants to identify for you, it is the gid that spreads out throughout the entire yerech. Lapuki chitza in the loy, as opposed to the gid achitza in the femoral nerve, which we said no. However, nevertheless, the Chachamim would say that the part that's on and in the calf is the part that's usher, and the part that, but we wouldn't know. You would think that only if you ate that entire part are you chayev, no matter how large it is. Therefore, the Torah tells us yoichlu to tell us that even if you only eat a kazayit out of a larger gid, but if you ate a gid from a small animal where the whole thing was all in kafayerach, but the total was less than a kazayit, the Chachamim are going to say you're still chayev. So the question is, didn't we say before that we use the word calf to teach us that you're not allowed to eat the gid anosha of a bird, which does not have a spoon-shaped muscle over there? The answer is trei calf, to be sure, but it says twice in the pasuk the word calf, because it says that gid anosha asher calf hayarech, because the malach kinoga b'calf yarech yachid. So twice calf, so one of them teaches us that the gid anosha is identified as being in the calf, and that it spreads throughout the calf, as the Chachamim say. And the other one teaches us that it spreads throughout the whole Yerech, that we learn from High Yerech, actually. And also the other calf teaches us that it doesn't apply to birds that don't have a spoon-shaped calf. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the bottom line is when Shmuel said that only the part that's a Sherah Kaf HaYerech is also Daraisa, the Chachamim would agree to that, Rav Yehuda would disagree with that. And then on top of that, again, we have the opinion of Rav Meir, who says that in general, the whole thing and all of its various branching throughout the whole leg is also, as well as the shulman, et cetera, yeah. And the halakha of Rav Meir.
I'm still not sure if it means the sciatic or the femoral.
No, so with that, we know for a fact it's the sciatic nerve. Everybody agrees that's the gidachnin. What the gidachitin is, which is only also the rabbanon, because we just said it's not also the raisa, because it doesn't spread throughout the whole yerach, that you have two different minhagim, what it is, whether it's the femoral or whether it's the peroneal nerve. Yeah.
The gidachitin,
that's what it is. Right, it's not the gidanosha, it's only also the rabbanon. Okay, fine. Mishnah says, okay, so now we're going to talk about the dinim of kashrus by the dinim of hilchos taruvus by way of dealing with the matter of gid anosha. Mishnah says, yerech shenisbasho b'gid anosha. If you have a thigh of an animal that was cooked with the gid anosha still inside, so is the leg chayef or not? In yeshba b'noisin tam, if the gid is large enough relative to the leg to give a flavor to the to impart a flavor into the meat of the leg, harezu asura, then it'll be offered. Now, our Mishnah is following the concept that called yesh b'gidin b'noisin tam, that the gid in and of itself has a taste, which it can impart to the meat. Later on, the Gemara is going to take up that point and discuss the different opinions, whether gidim do have a tam or not.
What is it that should say, in yesh? Either it has...
No, because if it's large enough too, if it's large enough to relative to the leg or not, you can have it, it can be large enough relative to the leg or not. Usually, as the Gemara is going to say, we usually figure whether it's 60 times as much. Tosfos brings up a point here as follows. First of all, you salted the meat. You had to have salted the meat to remove the blood before you cooked it. So therefore, in that case, the salting, therefore, if we say that the gid itself has a tam, then it means that some flavor of it already was transferred by the salt to the meat around the gid. The difference is that The difference is the salt doesn't have the power to make the flavor of it spread throughout all the meat. All it has the ability to do is kadeh klipa, is a peelable amount on all sides of the gid. So strictly speaking, Tosfos says what you'd have to do is you'd have to figure out the volume of the gid plus that peelable area around it, a layer of meat thick enough to peel off, and then count whether the rest of the meat of the leg is 60 times as much as that. Then Tosfos brings another possibility. Tosfos brings another possibility that Rabbeinu Ephraim learns. Now, later on, we're gonna deal later on, mostly in the next parak, we're gonna deal with a concept called Chaticha Nafis Nehelo, called Chaticha Nafis Nevelo. And primarily, the Gemara is gonna talk about it in connection with Bosa B'Cholav, and Rabbeinu Ephraim in from the Balei Tosfos, in fact, learns that it applies only to Bosa B'Cholav. Although Rishonim learns it applies more broadly. Chaticha Nafis Nevelo means if you have a piece of meat or a piece of whatever that became osur because it absorbed something of Isser, then we don't say later on, now what happens if later on that one gets cooked with other pieces of meat, let's say, or whatever. We don't say, well, we're going to figure out proportionately how much of it was the original Isser. We're not going to say that we're going to figure out proportionally how, let's say, for example, you have a piece of meat that milk fell onto it, and you didn't have 60 times as much meat to be mevatel the milk. If we don't say chaticha nafis nevela, then later on, if this meat is mixed with other pieces of meat in a pot, then we will say, okay, well, originally, to begin with, only 1 ounce of milk fell in. Therefore, all we need is 60 ounces of meat, and we're good. But if we say chaticha nafis nevela, the piece of meat... If we don't say chaticha nafis nevela, then it means all we need is 60 times as much as the original milk that fell onto the meat. If we say chaticha nafis nevela, then it means the piece of meat that milk fell on, which is, let's say, a 10-ounce piece of meat, that whole thing becomes as if it was nevela. Now, to be impossible, it's not just enough
that,
as long as the milk was less than 60 times as much. Now, if it was less than 60 times, then it's bottle anyway. If the individual piece of meat was not enough to be mevatel the milk, and later on that meat now is mixed and cooked with other pieces of meat, if we say chaticha nafis nevela, then we will say you need 60 times as much as the whole piece of meat. So not just you need 60 ounces of meat, you're going to need 600 ounces of meat to be mevatel 10 ounces of meat, because the whole 10 ounces are considered nevela. That concept is called chaticha nafis nevela. We're going to discuss it in more detail in the next parak in connection with Bosa B'Cholav. But over here, Tosfos brings, now you have Rabbeinu Ephraim learns that that concept applies only to Bosa B'Cholav. It does not apply to meat that absorbed other Isurim. So according to him, the layer of meat around the Gidah Nosha, even if we assume the Gidah Nosha has a flavor and imparts it to the meat when they're salted together, according to Rabbeinu Ephraim, that would not be a problem, that layer of meat around it, because that layer of meat is not intrinsically osur. It's just it itself absorbed flavor from the Gidah Nosha. Therefore, all you would need is 60 times as much as the Gidah Nosha itself. On the other hand, if we say chaticha nafis nevela applies to other isurim as well, then yes, that's what Tosfos is saying. You would have to figure out the volume of the gid anosha plus the layer of meat around it, and then see if the rest of the leg is 60 times as much as that. Okay, then you also have the point that Tosfos brings up. Why are we saying that we have to look only at the size of the gid anosha relative to the piece of meat? Why don't we say that we consider everything else that's in the pot also? The meat is in there with water and spices and whatever else. Why don't we, and potatoes and whatever, why don't we count those also? So Tosfos brings a couple of possibilities. One is that, in fact, we are talking about here where it is only one piece of meat, which is not completely inside the soup, let's say, so therefore the rest of them are not able to be mevatelit. Another possibility, which Tosfos doesn't bring up, but other Rishonim do, is there's a concept called there's a concept when the Isser is attached to the Heter, which it is over here, because the Gidanosha is part of the leg. Then you don't say that the rest of what's in the pot counts to be mevatelit. Then you only look at the piece itself. Okay. So anyway, so the Mishnah again, the Mishnah is assuming that the Gidanosha itself gives a flavor. Given the halacha, as the Gemara is going to say later, is ein begidin benoisim tam, then the halacha instead will have to refer to the shuman of the gid anosha. Again, the gid anosha has fat around it, and therefore you have to consider the volume of the fat.
Shuman counts as the gid in terms of tam?
In terms of, well, the shuman definitely gives a flavor. It's fat, sure, because of tam. Yeah.
No, but I know it gives a tam, but
okay.
But
how
can you say the shuman is the
gid? No, but it's still off the drabbanon. So it's still, you have to move after it. Hesed Masharinos, so how do you figure out, how do you see whether you have enough to be Mavato the Gid, or Truman, as the case may be, Kibosa Belefes, you consider as if you had meat cooked together with turnips, where if you had, in other words, if you had an equal amount, if you consider, in other words, the meat is, the meat corresponds to the Gid, the turnips correspond to the rest of the meat. If you have enough, if you had an equal amount of meat and turnips, where there would be a flavor of meat in the turnips, then you know. But then you know the same idea is that the Gid Anosha will have given a flavor, or the Truman, whatever, will have given a flavor into the meat around it, and therefore it's also. In other words, the Rashi explains Halacha Moshe Mitzinai that that's how you figure it out. The point is you figure out the amount. You find out the volume of the gid. You find out the volume of the gid, and you take that amount of meat and put it in another pot. You take the volume of the rest of the leg and put in an equal amount of turnips. Into the other part with meat, cook them together with the meat, give the flavor into the turnips, and you know the Gid Anosha, the corresponding amount of Gid Anosha gave a flavor into the meat that it was cooked with, and therefore it's awesome. Gid Anosha Shnis Bashal Magidim, another case, suppose you have Gid Anosha was cooked together with other Gidim, so then you don't have, then it's Min B'minoi, then they all have the same flavor, Bizman Shemakiroi, so if you can recognize which one is the Gid Anosha, Benoisin Tam, then you see whether it was, if there's enough Gid Anosha that it gave a flavor to the other ones, that it would have given a flavor to the other ones, in other words, then it's Osir, the Imlav, Kulan Asurin, and if not, then all of them are osir, which the Gemara is going to later on explain what it means is if it's min b'minoy, then you have to have 60 times as much, because min b'minoy you're not going to be able to tell what the flavor is. V'haroitev b'nois and tam, and as far as the gravy or the soup or whatever that you go according to nois and tam, was it able to give a flavor to it? Which usually means 60, but we're going to see in the Gemara that there are actually some exceptions to that. Okay, b'chein chaticha shel nevela, the same would apply as far as a piece of nevela meat that was cooked with pieces of kosher meat. B'chein chaticha shel dog tameh, or a piece of a non-kosher fish, shenis bashle machatichas, that was cooked together with other pieces of kosher fish. Same idea. Bizman shemakiron b'nois and tam, if you can recognize which were the pieces of iser, then you go according to nois and tam, and therefore if there's little enough iser to give a flavor to the pieces of heter, then they're mutter. The imlav kol nasores. If not, then all of them are osir because you don't know which one is the one that was osir, and each one you might have the concern that this is the one that was osir. The imlav, yeah, v'horoyte v'nois and tam. And again, the gravy, since that's min b'she'en and minoy, then it'll be mutter as long as then it'll be osir rather if there's nois and tam, if the piece of tray for meat or fish or whatever was large enough to give a flavor.
If it was min b'mino.
Min b'mino, then that's what we're saying. So if you can recognize the one that's osir, then you go according to nois and tam, and then you take out that one that's osir. If not, then all of them are going to be osir because you don't know which is the one that was osir. But we're going to see. We're going to get into the details of that in the Gemara. But wait. Okay. So first of all, Omar Shmuel lo shanu el shenis bashalba. This that we're saying, this first case of the Mishnah, that you cooked a thigh together with a Gid Anosha in it, and we're saying that if the Gid Anosha is large relative to the leg, then the whole leg is going to be osir, that's only Elishinis Bashalba. That's only if they were cooked in there, because then the soup, the gravy, whatever, makes the flavor spread throughout the whole piece of meat. Aval Nislaba, but if the thigh was roasted with the Gid Anosha inside, then there's less of a problem. Then all you have to do is keep on. You peel away the meat. You cut off the outer layers of meat. You can eat them until you reach the gid. Or actually, Tosafot says not strictly speaking the gid itself. You'd need till kadei klip or close to the gid. But whatever, the point is, you'd be able to eat most of it.
Because it doesn't cause it to spread so much.
However, the Gemara says, "Eini, is that so?" Va'amar Rav Huna. Didn't Rav Huna say, and now the Gemara assumes that either we're talking over here about Rav Huna who was the Rebbe of Shmuel, or we're talking about Rav Huna who was the Talmud of Shmuel. Either way, it's less likely that he and Shmuel are disagreeing. And Rav Huna said, if you have a goat, a young goat, which doesn't have very much fat in it, and if you roasted it with the chalev still in it, you didn't take out the chalev beforehand, also lechal afilu meirosh ozno, then you're not even allowed to eat from the tip of its ear. Even though the ear is very far away from the chalev that's in the back half of the body, nevertheless, we say shuman mefapea bekuloi. We say that fat. Well, that's actually what the Gemara is going to answer. Yeah. So in other words, it sounds like the iser spreads throughout the entire body. So why are you telling me that if you roasted it with the gid anoshe inside, then it'll be mutter until you reach close to the gid? The answer is shiny chalev mefapea. The difference is that chalev fat. Spreads, it penetrates throughout all the flesh. So therefore, we can say it penetrated even as far as it, all the way to the ear. Yeah. So therefore, so the whole thing is going to be altered. By the way, there's a concept that's brought in a number of places in Chassidus. Torah of Chassidus is like oil. The Torah we mentioned the other day is compared to many different liquids. Specifically, Pnimiyas HaTorah is compared to oil and the fat, like we're saying over here. And fat and oil have this property of the fateh bakula, that they're able to penetrate throughout the entire organism. Therefore, representing the idea that that's what Chassidus does to a person's limit of Torah, it's supposed to be that it penetrates his entire essence and everything that he learns from Torah is infused with that, with concepts of Chassidus.
Well, let me ask you a question. Nigla doesn't do that.
Nigla you learn different parts of Nigla, but each one is like it's an entity unto itself, kind of. Chassidus,
no,
okay. So
diffuses your body also.
Well, not in the same way. So Torah Chassidus diffuses and penetrates and infuses everything that you learn in every other area of Torah is infused with ideas of Chassidus. Yes, this is, for example, you have the Rebbe mentioned this in particular in Kuntres and Yonash al Torah Chassidus, how we see that Torah specifically illuminates and gives a certain chayus into every other area of learning Torah, into Pshat and in Remez and in Jerusha and inside each of them. Nigla is one of the four ways of learning Torah. But Torah, that spreads into everything. Torah Chassidus has that special property. It's like oil. I guess so. Okay, let's go on. Okay, Nigla gives a certain kind of chayus into that particular area. Torah Chassidus is more general. We'll talk about it more afterwards. Let's continue. So the question is, so chaylev is one thing. It spreads throughout the whole thing, but not the gid anoshe. Okay, so the question is, chaylev also. On the other hand, you're telling me that with chaylev it'll be also because it spreads throughout the entire body. So Amar Rabba Baba Chana, didn't Rabba Baba Chana say, Uvda Haba Kameda Rabbi Yechanan, there was a case that was brought to Rabbi Yechanan, B'knishta de Moin, in the shul of Moin, which is the name of the place, B'gdish at Sloy B'chelbe, there was also a goat there that was roasted with the fat in it, with the chaylev in it, that was the chaylev that's also, V'osu V'shailu Ala Rabbi Yechanan, they came and asked Rabbi Yechanan the shaylev what to do, V'omar, and Rabbi Yechanan said, it's not a problem, Kola Poi Chalacha Magil Chelbe, you can peel off and eat the meat and eat until you get close to the chaylev, until you get to the part that absorbed directly from the chaylev. So you can see the chaylev doesn't spread throughout the The answer is how, if you're able to eat some of the meat, and then not like we said before, that it's all also until the tip of the ear. The answer is how kochu shava. The answer is that was a very thin animal. So Tosfos brings two explanations. One is that maybe we can say that the chalev of a lean animal doesn't have this power of spreading throughout the whole body. So therefore, it would be mutter. The other possibility is because it was lean, it had only a little bit of chalev, so there's enough meat to make it batel b'shishin. So you have those two different explanations. The other one was not. The other one was one that had plenty of fat. So therefore, either it's strong enough that's able to penetrate the whole thing, or there's no bitul b'shishin, right? Because there wasn't enough. It's meat.
What comes first, the taste or the volume?
Okay, what's the difference? The point is that the volume, whatever. The point is that the point is, therefore, that in this case, you could be master it because the fat itself was a different kind of fat because it was from a lean animal, or because it was bottled with shishim. So you have the post-game discussed the pros and cons of these two things. But one thing is, the Ramah says, nowadays, we don't really have the expertise to know what's considered a lean animal and what's considered a fat animal. Therefore, we always say it's also. Except maybe the Hepsim or other. Okay. Fine. Rav Huna bar Yehuda gives a different answer. The case was not over there. The case that was brought to Rav Yechanan was not an entire animal cooked with its fat, or roasted rather with its fat. There it was specifically the kidney that was roasted or cooked or whatever with the fat around it. The Sharia and Rabbi Yochanan said it's mutter, the reason being because, as we said the other day, the kidneys have, between the fat around them, which is usur, and the kidney itself, you have a membrane, you have a capsule, and therefore that prevents the fat from penetrating too far into the kidney. It penetrates a little bit. Then therefore you'd have to peel off, you'd have to do, again, today quickly, you'd have to peel off a layer of the kidney, but the rest of it would be mutter. So no proof for the regular case where you roast an animal with the fat in it, where therefore there's nothing preventing the fat from penetrating.
There's no membrane,
exactly.
Well, there are membranes in the muscles.
Okay, fine, but not necessarily between the chelav and the rest of the muscles. Rav Huna bar Yehuda Amar, Robin bar Rav Abba gives a different explanation. Kilchus ve'ilfas halpava, it was, besides for the cases of Chela that we were just discussing, they also brought to Rav Yochanan a case involving kilchus, which is a small non-kosher fish that had been cooked in a pot together with meat. The also shailul Rav Yochanan, so they came to ask Rav Yochanan the shaila. But amalahu, the shaila is a kosher, and that was a non-kosher fish cooked with kosher meat. But amalahu, and Rav Yochanan tells them, litame kfila arma. What you should do is have a kfila, which means a chef, have a goyish chef taste it and see if it has a taste of the fish. And if he says it does, then it's also, and if not, then it's mutter. That's benoit in town. So.
What do you need a chef? Any goyish.
Well, I mean, So Rashi learns that the only reason it's mutter, Rashi says, is because you're not actually asking him, is it also or not. Then you couldn't rely on him. What you're doing is mesiach hapitumah. You're asking him, you know, I have this, yeah, does this meat happen to taste of fish? So therefore, if he tells you that it does, then yeah. Tosfos learns differently because he's a professional, therefore he doesn't want to lose his good professional reputation, therefore he's going to be honest even if you're asking him directly, is it kosher?
We have the concept of a professional
DNA. We had it, I think, in Avodah Zarah, but in any case, you actually end up, now that Amar writes that nowadays Ashkenazim, and it's beginning from his time, Ashkenazim have the minhag, we don't rely on a phalon, or we don't rely on a goy, whether Messiah will be Tumay or not, we check whether there's shishim. If there is shishim, then it's also, if not, then it's mutter. Rashi actually seems to be saying over here, Mephoshim explained Rashi to be saying that you need both. You need 60 times as much, but even when you have 60 times as much, you need a phalon. Most of the other Rishonim learn not like that, that it's one or the other. Either you have 60 times as much, or you ask a Kfela. But anyway, that Amar says you don't ask a Kfela. So this is another one where you have Sfardim, both sorts of Ashkenazim. Sfardim can be Stoimach on a Goy, if you ask him the Siyach of the Tzomai. Ashkenazim, Lamaisa, Sfardim in general don't use that Kula anymore. They just check whether it's 60 times as much, but sometimes they do.
The Rambam is
a Saudi, but they're
not.
No.
But the Rambam
is what is passed. You can have a go. You check it, and if you don't have a go, then you do 60. Okay. Omar Rava. So Rava says in this connection, Meresh Havakakashali Hodatanya. I used to wonder about. I used to not be able to understand this that we learn in a Braita as follows. The Tanya, Kedera Shabisha Bobaster, a pot that you cooked meat in it. Lo Yavasha Bacholav. You're not later allowed to cook milk in it because the pot absorbed meat, and then the taste of it is going to go into the milk. The imbishal benois in town, but if you did do that, then you have to see is the milk that you cooked in it afterwards enough, large enough relative to the pot, that there was no flavor put into it, then it'll be mutter. If not, then it'll be usur. Similarly, truma lo yavasha b'chulin, if you have a pot that previously you cooked truma in, you're not afterwards allowed to cook chulin in it, because again, flavor from the truma will go into the chulin, and then zorim will not be able to eat it. The imbishal benois in town, but if you did, then you have to also check whether there's a flavor of the truma in it. And if there is, then Zorim can't eat it. No, then Zorim can't eat it. So that's the question. Bishlema truma toim lakoyim. So Rava says, that I didn't understand. I used to not understand. Truma, there's no problem. You ask a koyim to taste it. See if he can tell us the taste. El a boss of a cholov man toim lay. But if you have a possible case, a boss of a cholov, how are you supposed to check it out? You can't ask any Jew to taste it. Hashta de omer of Yechon, some chinen a kfila arma. Now that Rav Yochanan said this din, that you're able to rely on a goyish chef, then now also we can say now Rav says I understand how it works in the potential Boston Mahalov case. You give it to a kfela and see what he has. Again, not truma. Boston Mahalov. Now you ask him, does this milk taste the meat? Again, according to Rashi, you ask him the siach of truma. According to Tosfos, he doesn't want to ruin his professional reputation. Therefore, you can do that. Again, according to Rashi, the only reason it works is because he's Messiah Lepitchum, because you're not actually asking him what is the halacha about it. You're asking him, practically speaking, what's the fact that he tastes anything without telling him that it impinges on halacha. And according to Tosfos, it doesn't even that. Because he's a professional, therefore you can rely on his opinion. Okay.
Tomorrow?
Between tomorrow, Shem. Right, Yosef.